It's Tuesday, May 25th, 2021. I'm Tanya Harris, and welcome to TMI Daily, your daily roundup of everything people are talking about online since they aren't allowed to talk about it in person. According to the White House, as of today, 50% of all American adults are fully vaccinated. Unfortunately, the other 50% won't be vaccinated until Donald Trump tells them what to do at his upcoming inauguration, which of course will come after he arrests Biden, Harris, and all the other demonic cult pedophiles who delayed it. President Biden has doubled the budget for extreme weather planning as hurricane season approaches, which is a big difference from the Trump administration, which spent their whole budget on plastic maps and Sharpies. Texas legislators approved a new bill allowing anyone in the state to carry handguns without a license and without undergoing background checks or training. Just don't wear a mask there and you'll be perfectly fine. Speaking of states run by morons, on Monday, Florida adopted a law that they claim allows social media companies to be fined for suspending political candidates from their platforms. Facebook and Twitter were quick to respond with an eye roll emoji. Demographers are predicting that the global population will decline for the first time ever by the middle of this century. I guess the Earth has finally reached its quality over quantity phase. The Federal Aviation Administration reports that it has dealt with 2,500 unruly passenger reports in the first 5 months of this year. That's up from 150 cases total all of last year. It's gotten so bad that airlines are now offering business class, economy, or full contact. The Hollywood Reporter found a spike in interest in houses with two kitchens in the Los Angeles area. This is due to one being needed for live streaming your cooking for social media and the other being converted into a laundry room where you reheat Taco Bell every meal and cry about how empty your life is. The Late Show with Stephen Colbert will allow studio audiences to return in June as long as they're fully vaccinated. I don't think his staff has to worry though, because if you're not smart enough to get vaccinated, then you probably aren't watching Stephen Colbert to begin with. Some people on the internet are mad at Matthew Perry for selling a Friends-themed shirt, which reads, "Can I be more vaccinated?" Though mostly they're mad that they didn't trademark it first so they could sell it on Wish. Demi Lovato said that no one should compliment people on weight loss as it could trigger eating disorders. Maybe instead, no one should mention whatever dumbass shit Demi Lovato says, since it clearly triggers her to say it. Now, let's send it over to tonight's TMI Daily cast and crew roundtable. Stay safe.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of TMI Daily. I'm Veronica Aiello, and as always, I'm joined by some of my TMI Daily crew. Let's go around and say hello to everyone watching at home or listening to our TMI Daily podcast. Let's start with you, Pete.
Okay, well, firstly, I'm thrilled because now that Ian's not here, today was the first day I didn't put on pants at all, which is great because I haven't done that in like about 2 months. So that felt good. And also, hey, they started the grand jury investigation into Trump. So indictments will come within the next 6 months.
Yes. Joe.
Hi, everyone listening on Google Podcasts, and a very happy National Towel Day. Everyone, don't forget to take your towel, whether you're hitchhiking the galaxy or going to the pool. And one other thing, Demi Lovato, congratulations on the weight loss.
Uh-oh, you just triggered it.
Oh, no.
Trigger warning. Elizabeth.
I want to be so empathetic and understanding, but if... I just maybe chill for 5 minutes, Demi. Just like take a breather. Step away from shit. Driving me bonkers. You can't make a right move around that person. My God.
Can't you just be an asshole in a personal life for a little while?
Yeah, seriously. Well, I think this is her new career, though. Like, this is her career. It has nothing to do with music. It has any, you know, nothing to do with acting.
Which is a shame, because she make, they, excuse me, they, because they're non-binary.
Oh, please.
I'm trying. They make bangers. There's some absolute fucking bops in there. But
yeah, they are essentially a karaoke artist who gets lucky every so often.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, that's it.
That's fair.
And yeah.
Hello, everybody. Happy spin. Sandwich Week continues here in L.A., and my shout-out today goes to Philippe the Original in downtown L.A., because those French dip sandwiches are delicious. Yeah. It's also National Wine Day, so be divine and drink some wine.
Is that why you're in that awesome wine cellar, Dan?
Of course.
Wine day?
Your personal wine cellar.
You have one, too? Yeah. Well, and Peter, please. Wear pants on Monday.
Danny, I wasn't here. What was yesterday's sandwich?
The chicken parmesan over at Georgie's in La Fiana Flintridge.
Okay. I'm writing these down. No, I know Philippe's. I mean, we all know Philippe's.
Yeah.
I've never had Philippe's.
That's the one. There's the other two French dip places. Which one's the one with the good tater tots? The one that was a speakeasy? You know what I'm talking about?
That's Philippe's.
No, it's the
That's
here in LA.
That's the one downtown.
Yeah, that one is so good. I can't. Oh my god, I can't remember the name.
The real original French dip sandwich.
They give
the other the other good one's the French Market over in New Orleans Square at Disneyland, but they're OC. So
no, nothing. nothing involving food at Disneyland should be said in the same breath with the word. Maybe good is in, it's good that it only costs $60 for this sandwich.
Seriously,
I do love the beignets in Disneyland. They're fabulous.
Yeah, those are.
Oh, I saw today
the churros aren't bad.
They have the birria like tacos churros now at California Adventure.
You're thinking of Kohl's.
Kohl's, yes. Kohl's,
yes. Oh, I love the taste.
Kohl's is like the Andy Philippe's, but I prefer Philippe's.
Kohl's.
I like Philippe's because of that mustard.
Yeah, Philippe's is really good too, but I think I like Kohl's a little bit
better. When will these French dip wars end?
And I also feel like when you go to Philippe's, there's a really good chance you can get tetanus. I don't know.
No. What you gotta do is dip each hand into the pickled eggs, and then you won't get tetanus.
It looks like you might sit at a table, and there might be like a screw in there from 1901 that catches you in the arm. Next thing you know, you got tetanus.
That's true.
Well, they hide the floor nails with that sawdust, so you can't see it coming.
Yeah, that's what it is. Don't go there without shoes on or pants.
We used to go there when we used to go to the Dodger game. So whenever they have Dodger games, you just see a bunch of fans in there, and it's really cool. So it's like a staple of Los Angeles.
They have an Italian. If you ever go to the Dodger game, there's an Italian deli around the corner, and they make a meatball sub the size of Pete's head, and you can take that there. And you actually have one sub you can share with like three people. It's amazing.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, let's start tonight's show. When writers David Crane and Martha Kaufman pitched NBC executives about a show called Six of One, based around a group of people in their early 20s during the time in your life when your friends are your family, they couldn't have known that they were about to create a show that has lasted over 25 years and multiple generations of viewers, nine, but that's what the show Friends has become. Through 236 episodes, countless performances of Smelly Cat, Dr. Drake Ramore references and arguments about whether Ross and Rachel were on a break, Friends has endured in a way that very few shows in television history have. This Thursday, the long-awaited Friends reunion premieres on HBO Max. Let's take a look at the trailer for it.
The test is ready. Rachel wrote Ross a letter and demanded he read it before they got back together. How many pages was that letter?
18 pages!
18 pages.
Front and back!
Front and back is correct!
Wait, do it one more time!
Oh my god.
Here we go.
Where's the tissue box?
The cast of Friends!
Wow. Does Courtney still have her lines written on the table?
We've literally just slipped right back.
Oh. We regret.
We have such a bond from this show.
Were Ross and Rachel on a break?
Yes.
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 Bullshit.
The first table read, that's the first time I laid eyes on any of you.
Everyone was so perfectly cast.
Yeah.
This is from the one where everyone finds out.
Oh! Oh! My eyes!
I know.
My eyes!
I remember I went to the producer of the show I was on, and he said, that show's not going to make you a star.
I remember one time, I happened to have the news on, and on the TV was an aerial shot of each of our houses.
Oh, jeez.
And I remember looking at it going, what? My roof is a mess.
It was an incredible time. We became best friends.
Yep, I'm going to cry now.
When I watch the episodes, I'm laughing out loud because you all make me laugh so hard.
I know you know how big the show is. What you have given so many people is an experience of huge comfort.
Oh, my God!
We felt like we had these friends.
I love you guys so much.
Get out of here, James Corden. No one wants you. Go on, get. Shoot.
So tonight we thought we'd gather our friends to talk about those friends. So first, let me ask, who here is a fan of the show and why? I'm like Elizabeth. Okay, let's start with you, Danny.
Oh, I'm a fan. I just fell in love with it. It was just something, you know, not necessarily different, but they just had this chemistry that made them all very likable. And having had the opportunity to go see live tapings of them, you know, towards the end, just cemented that fanship that I have for them. I have all 10 DVDs, and I still stream them on HBO too. So I'm a fan. We were lucky enough in 2019, before all this pandemic started, we had a Friendsgiving. We went to actual Warner Brothers studio and got a tour of the set. Got to sit on the couch. You know, we got to do little fun bits here and there, but I've been in stage 24. It's a beautiful stage, you know. I just love everything about Friends.
Okay. Pete, what about you?
See, I was a big fan of the show when it was on, but I definitely don't think of myself as somebody that has mythologized it. Sorry, I can't even speak today. Mythologized it because it was a really good show, and the reason why it was good was because it kind of was outside of the realm of the real world. Like it didn't have to take place in a way where I had to relate to the characters that much. They were just funny. They were fun to watch. The storylines were not heavy. There was nothing like, there was no very special episodes of Friends. Like nobody like got a cancer diagnosis and then had to, you know, like for half a season might have been dying.
It was a comfort like show. It's what I call
it. It was like eating a bag of potato chips every Thursday.
Yeah.
Because you didn't leave the show with much of a feeling like, oh my God, I got to call somebody up and talk about tonight's episode, because it was light as air. And I think that's why I like the show so much. Mm-hmm. But I also, I haven't really kind of like kept up with watching them years later. Although whenever I do see one and I just have nothing else to watch, I'll put it on and I do still laugh. I still think the show is really funny. And I think the casting is brilliant for it because, you know, when you read some of the people that also read for these parts, you wonder yourself, how could anybody else have played any of these people? And when you realize that none of them really were famous when they came into the show, it kind of just amazes you that they were able to find six people that were so well matched. Who had so little, you know, little big time experience doing this.
Okay. Yeah, the most famous one was Courtney Cox because she was in the Bruce Springsteen video.
Nothing real, no big deal.
You know?
Yeah. Before I go to Elizabeth, Judd, were you a fan of Friends?
Not really.
You were?
I like little bits of it. Like I like little like, you know, Pivot and stuff like that and mac and cheese and things, but I was never really a regular watcher of it. It wasn't really my thing. There were some other people that I knew that really loved it, but it wasn't my thing. In fact, I think I've probably seen more episodes of Coupling, which is the British show that it's based on, than actual Friends. But I mean, you know, I get it and I realize where it fits in the lexicon. It was just never really my thing. I was still trying to figure out how they afforded those apartments.
Okay, Elizabeth.
Brain control.
I'm kind of like Pete, and I think you, Veronica, were like, I like it and I appreciate it, but I'm definitely not obsessed with it the way people are, like, you know, so intensely into it. And like, all they do is rewatch the episodes. I'm like, yeah, there's new TV and movies and like, books, and there's a lot of new things out in the world. You can step out of that bubble every once in a while. That's my one beef with people who like do that to excess, where they just like, they're like, oh, I did watch Friends. I'm like, you've seen it 8 million times, and I'm a rewatcher. So believe me, if I'm telling you, hey, maybe find something new, you know, you're in deep. But yeah, no, I appreciate it. I actually was having to look at clips of it today for work, and I was finding things that people would cut out, basically like one storyline. And it is, you know, it's all so tightly put together and written, which is something I think goes a little underappreciated with, you know, A, B, and C stories going on, and it all wraps up tightly. It's a very well-constructed show, you know, with the jokes and the humor and everything. And it is perfectly cast, because I truly can't picture anyone besides those people in those roles. And I think there's a weird split of people both, over-mythologizing it and then trying to downplay it at the same time as if it didn't matter.
Yeah.
When it's like, no, it had an impact. Maybe it's not the highest comedy, but it's also not a bad show by any means. It's just, it kind of exists. It's very well done. And it deserves a certain amount of respect. But yes, you don't have to be like, I have the all six Friends tattooed on my back, you know, kind of intensity.
Yeah, it's kind of like what Elizabeth was saying. It's like, you don't have to rewatch the show. I mean, as much as I know there are people out there who do, and if you're one of those people, I'm going to tell you this. This is a little secret, so I'm going to get really close to the camera when I say it. You're not going to learn anything new by watching it a second or 25th time.
I disagree.
It's a really funny show. It's a really well-written show. But what made it even better is that they adopted something that Saturday Night Live sometimes gets accused of doing, which is having really good actors doing okay material. You know, and so yeah, like there's a lot of times when some of that material probably wasn't nearly as funny as the people that were doing the lines. And maybe because of that, it was funny. I mean, again, and I don't want anybody to think that like I was a huge fan. I watched every episode the night it happened. And if I wasn't home, I VHS recorded it because it was the 90s. And I watched it when I got home if I wasn't there earlier. So, I mean, yeah, I was every episode I saw. So it's not that, but it's just not one of those shows where you have to have, like, you can be reading a magazine while Friends is on. It's like a great baseball game. A lot of things that are not going to happen in between the big moments.
Well, not to be dramatic, I would kick back and it would be on in the hospital in the daytime on TBS, just like hours of it. And so, yeah, for like 6 hours, all you'd hear out of my room would be a day, 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 day.
Yeah, because when you have cancer, the last thing you want to do is be watching something that's heavy.
I mean, I watched Friends and Golden Girls a lot when I had to sit. It was so good.
You're lucky you didn't smoke out of the room.
And I also watched Gods of Egypt. Do not watch that. Very bad film.
What made it work too, and I didn't realize it till today, was that the humor and the jokes were very familiar. I'm not sure how to explain it, but it dealt with real life issues. They didn't make fun of OJ. It wasn't thematic, you know, to what was going on. And I read that in People magazine today, and I'm like, oh, that's right. They didn't make fun of, you know, what was going on in the real world. They may have mentioned the president maybe once or twice at best, but they kept it where it was jokes that people would, you know, I guess get on board with and be familiar with. You know, and even though 9/11 happened towards the end, not one mention was made of it on the show.
Yeah, that's interesting that you said that, because we were actually going to bring that up.
I'm going to start giving Danny the notes ahead of time so he doesn't fuck up the whole show. Because he's done it twice now tonight.
He knows what we're talking about. Danny has a vision. Yeah, I kind of feel the same way that like almost everybody on the panel except for Danny feels. I wasn't a Friends fanatic, but if it's on TV, like, I'll watch it and I will laugh, because it is. It's very funny. I did watch it, you know, watch the whole series when it was on. I remember the last episode, my friend Janelle and I made a night out of it. So she came over, you know, we had food and we were watching it because it was, you know, it was kind of like an end to like a certain era. The thing about watching, rewatching shows, I love to rewatch like my favorite shows. Some of them might be a little dark. Not, they're not always comedies, but, and I don't mind them. Like Friends, I probably wouldn't be like, oh, let me start watching it from the beginning. I want to rewatch it again either. And another thing too, for me personally, I never felt a connection to any of the characters. Like it'd be like when they were getting married or when this was happening to me, I wasn't like, oh, I'm so happy that, you know, finally Rachel and Ross, like it did nothing for me really. But again, you know, Elizabeth was saying, you know, yeah, it was a very important show and it was very well written. And I think, you know, the jokes were very funny. And like I said, if it's on TV, I'll watch it. But will I purposely put it on? Probably not. Just like not, you know, not my kind of show that I would like to watch over and over again.
You know, so it's kind of like that's it's so weird because when they announced that they were doing the reunion special, I didn't get all that excited about
either.
It because the problem is we actually know what every one of those people have been doing in, yeah. since the show went off the air. Yeah. It's not like the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air where everybody went into witness protection except for Will Smith. So it's like, yeah, you know, we know where everyone went. We've seen them in pictures together over the years. It's not like they haven't been. So all we're going to get, and I'm going to watch it. See, this is the crazy thing. I've said a lot of bad things about Friends, and I will tell you, I love the show. It's one of my favorite shows as far as situation comedies. But I'm going to watch it, but I'm not going to spend one moment wondering about any moment that they're going to put on there. I mean, unless they get into whole things about why Matthew Perry kept gaining weight and losing weight during drug binges. Now, if they do that, I'm totally in, you know, or like, why did Brad Pitt dump you, Jen? Or maybe like, why would you marry what's his face?
David Arquette.
Yes, David Arquette. Oh, like, David. If you did those things, I'm all in because that's the only mystery to this that I don't have an answer for, and I think I kind of find that to be interesting. But they're not. They're going to basically they got James Corden there to suck their asses for an hour, and they're going to just show clips. And tell each other how wonderful they were, and then they'll tear up, and we'll oh my god, oh
yeah,
my god!
Yeah, and a lot of them, like Courtney Cox and Jennifer Aniston are best friends. They're always together.
They're always,
and like, it's like you're not like oh my god, time. We're going to see them together for the first time. And like the Fresh Prince, I was excited about the reunion. I'm not going to lie, that one I was really excited about. Well, Elizabeth, so you're the youngest person on the panel. So did you watch it when it was first in syndication?
No, I watched some of it. I know I watched some of it live because I think my parents were watching it, but they were not like mega fans either. It was like, we liked the NBC comedy block, you know, on Thursday nights.
Yeah.
But like when I was a kid, I really didn't like Seinfeld at all because I was like, they're kind of annoying. And why don't they just talk directly to each other? Because I was like 8 and didn't get like adult world bullshit, you know, minutia. I was like, well, I just don't understand. And I was, frankly, I was more of a Drew Carey girl at the end of the day. It was my favorite sitcom to watch when I was a kid. That and Home Improvement, I'm not going to lie. I think because, well, Home Improvement took place in Michigan. They made it clear. And then,
did you have a crush on Jonathan Taylor Thomas?
No, actually, I really didn't. Of anything, when I was a kid on the Drew Carey show, I kept asking. He had a dog named Speedy for like a long time that had its back end was in a cart for a bunch of episodes. Mm-hmm. And I routinely ask my mom, I was like, why wasn't Speedy in this episode? And she just was blunt. She's like, they can't afford to put a dog in every episode. But I love, yeah, that was actually, and I know we watched like Roseanne and stuff when I was a little younger and everything. But yeah, like Friends, I watched it, but I wasn't like, oh, I want to emulate that, you know, because it's probably too little to be like,
yeah,
I'm not super, super young, but I was like, you know, preteen.
That started Elizabeth down her long path towards her Hollywood career going, I'm going to figure out a way to put a dog in it.
I'm going to. This is for you, Speedy the dog.
So let me ask you guys this. So what got you to watching the show when it first aired? And I mean, Elizabeth kind of talked a little bit about
proximity.
But also, who's your favorite Friends cast member? Who's your favorite friend? So for me, it's David Schwimmer. I love David Schwimmer. I think he's hilarious. And I just, that he was my favorite. So, and how I started watching it, I honestly don't remember. I just started watching it one night. Mm-hmm. Pete, what about you? What got you to watch
it? I actually had it's an interesting story about this. Right, the season, right as the season before it started, when they started promoting all their new shows, there was the talk about these two shows that were coming to NBC on Thursday nights. And you know, kind of like what Elizabeth was saying, the Thursday night block of shows was at the time probably the biggest deal on TV, because, you know, before Friends, you had, I think it was Cheers, mm-hmm. Family Ties, Seinfeld, and whatever fourth show they threw in at the time. And then it was L.A. Law at 10 o'clock. And then when L.A. Law ended, and when Cheers was ending, they announced that they were bringing in these two new shows, one of them being Friends, the other show being ER. And I remember there was a whole controversy because CBS was starting the show Chicago Hope at the same exact time. And because it had a star-studded cast, you know, with Mandy Patinkin and some of the other people that were involved with the show, like Alan Arkin, they were saying, oh, this show ER just sounds like some bullshit soap opera with pretty doctors. It's not going to last very long. And Friends, they gave even less credence to. And I remember what made me actually watch the show. It's really funny. I went to the famous the famous toy store in New York, FAO Schwartz. And when you walk in, there's like this long elevator that takes you upstairs. And right to the side of the elevator, they had a gigantic cutout of the Friends cast. And it said, coming this fall, meet your new best friends. And just for some reason, something about that kind of like just like it caught me in a way where I was like, okay, that sounds interesting. Let me watch it because of it. I mean, all pretty looking people. Again, the only one I kind of had any knowledge of was Courtney Cox. So it was, yeah, that was probably the thing that got me. It was a really good campaign. Mm.
Were you looking for new best friends, Pete? Is that what got you?
Oh, yeah. I'm still. Yeah. still on the hunt for it, you know? Thank God for the pandemic. I haven't had to worry about having any. But yeah, as we come out, I will be auditioning in case anybody's looking.
Elizabeth, favorite friend?
Favorite friend? I think I got to go with Lisa Kudrow. Or are we doing character or actor?
Character.
I'll still go with Phoebe then. I like Phoebe. I just like her weirdness. I like all her weird stuff. Probably the bit from Friends I remember most that cracks me up is she says, like, she gives Monica the recipe for her grandma's, like, secret chocolate chip cookie recipe. And it's Nestlé Toll House. And then, Monica can't recreate the cookies. And then finally they figure out it's Nestlé Toll House cookies, just, like, from the package. Mm-hmm. And she, like, looks down and goes, yeah, that tracks for grandma. And they go, why did you look down? And she goes, oh, there's a reason she's down there. Just implying her grandma was in hell. And I just really liked how dark that joke was for that show.
Danny, what about you? Who's your favorite friend?
Hands down, Phoebe Buffay. She was just so funny and without trying to be funny. And there was just this genuineness that Lisa Kudrow brought to the character that seeing her do it live was even better. And seeing her actually sing it, you know, Smelly Cat Live, that was great. Mm-hmm. And I started watching it because I had just met new friends around that time. At our church youth group. And, you know, there was a lot of, you know, new relationships forming and building. And I was already watching NBC because of Seinfeld and Mad About You. And there was this premise of for ER and Friends. And it hooked me. Hook, line, and sinker.
Okay. Joe, do you have a favorite friend? Or
You could say me if you want.
We're talking about characters on the show, Pete.
Okay. Damn it! Okay.
That would be Joey, because his name is also like my name, and he was like, and he had the bad jokes, which I really liked. Mm-hmm. I mean, at the same time, I to this day I still have a thing for Jennifer Aniston. We're almost the same age. In fact, same year, so we're only months apart. and stuff like that. And I'm really disappointed that, you know, even though I've tweeted you a few times, Jen, and told you that I'm the man that can give you a baby, you still haven't answered me.
She's not even on Twitter, you ding dong.
Now we're all going to get brought into the harassment suit.
No, I had her back.
There's no harassment on it. Hey.
So, like we talked about, when the show first started, the familiar name in the cast was Courtney Cox, mostly because, like we mentioned earlier, she was in the Bruce Springsteen video, Dancing in the Dark. And the rest of the cast, were relative unknowns who had made guest appearances on other shows, like Lisa Kudrow, who had a small recurring role on Mad About You, or Matthew Perry, who landed roles in short-lived shows like Sydney and Home Free, or like Jennifer Aniston, who was a Nutrisystem model, before bouncing around shows like the TV version of Ferris Bueller and starring in the classic film Leprechaun.
Leprechaun!
So today, each is known all over the world and has a net worth of over $100 million. So for those of you then who watched the show when it first aired, which was all of us here on the panel, who would you have guessed was going to be the breakout star of the show and why? I always knew it was going to be Jennifer Aniston, just because, like, she was like the pretty one, then, yeah, you know, the prettiest one, I should say. She had her own hairstyle that, like, everybody wanted to. And just by the way, when you have hair like mine, you cannot wear the Jennifer Aniston hair. I
like, like, literally no one can. Like, seriously, it's really, yeah, truly, like, only suited to her.
Big deal about her hair, you know, all the Jennifer Aniston hair. I'm like, okay.
The Rachel.
A breakout.
Pete. Yeah, it's definitely all about the hair, because her hair was almost as famous as she was, yes, for a while. Mm. And I remember, like, seeing news reports about, like hairdressers who were learning how to do the Rachel for women. But it's kind of funny because as a longtime Howard Stern fan, I remember when she used to come on to hawk Nutrisystem's products for it, because she used to be heavy, and actually she became a model for them. And when she was on Howard Stern, he would talk to her, not knowing that she was ever going to be anything, because she was just some pretty girl in the room, although her nose was different than the one she had later on when she did that show. But yeah, like, it was just obvious she was going to be the one that was going to be the biggest star out of it. I mean, I always thought it would be her, or maybe, actually, strange enough, Matt LeBlanc, because he seemed to get a lot of the more wide ranging comedy stuff. Like, because he did a lot of the physical comedy, and he also played the big dumb guy. So I thought maybe, well, this guy seems like he's being built to be like a good character actor. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah.
Did you say that she was a spokesmodel for Nutrisystem?
Yeah, she was.
Did you hear that, Demi Lovato?
Uh-oh.
Uh-oh.
Somebody probably told her she looked great when she lost weight, and look what it did to her.
So we can say then that the most successful friend has to be Jennifer Aniston, because, yeah, she has transitioned into a major film career and been able to come back to television with a show like The Morning Show.
Well, to be fair, her dad was famous, too.
Yes,
yeah, she came from a famous family.
Mm-hmm. So why do you think that of all the talented actors in that show, she ended up being so much more successful after Friends, besides the hair, besides everything else, the fact that she came from a famous family? Do you think that, was there anything else that you guys think kind of pushed her along? Danny?
Her relationships, you know, because, yeah, she got the highest profile, you know, mm-hmm, date, or whatever you want to call him, Brad Pitt. Mm-hmm. You know, and that kind of catapulted her to the A-list. And, yeah, she also won an Emmy towards the end of the run, and that definitely helped too.
Oh, she won an Emmy. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Her and Lisa Kudrow are the only Emmy winners from the actors. Everyone was nominated except Courtney Cox.
Hmm. Interesting.
Funny. Courtney Cox got dick.
Oh, my God.
Elizabeth?
Yeah, I think Jennifer Aniston's also just an incredibly likable presence, mm-hmm, on top of everything else, like on talk shows and in interviews and things like that. You know, it's not quite Girl Next Door. It's not that bland, but it's like, just like she's like a nice friend. Like, you're like, oh, I really like that Jennifer girl that we know, like that kind of personality. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Relatable, likable, nice, humble enough too, I have to say. Like, she's not been like, ah, yes, I was Rachel, all bow down before me and my mighty haircut, you know. So she's She seems so normal in a like mm-hmm. a really appealing way.
Okay, Joe, and then I'll go to you, Pete. Go ahead, Joe.
You also have to like her character was part of probably was the biggest story arc in the whole thing.
Yeah,
you know, Ross and Rachel, will they get together? People who didn't even watch the show knew about Ross and Rachel. And, you know, it was one of those things that touched beyond that. And so it's really easy to bank off of that once the show is done, because if people never watch the show, they still would know who Ross and Rachel were.
Mm-hmm.
That's true. Pete?
I also think that with her, you know, I mean, Danny first, what he said hit the nail on the head. It was definitely, you know, her relationships that kind of like maybe pushed her forward quicker. But also, the role that she had in that show kind of offered her up to a lot of the standard roles you're going to see in films for a lot of like actresses who are doing rom-coms, because she was the love interest for the first two seasons. Everybody else kind of just floated around with characters with their character arcs, but she was the female love interest, you know, before anybody else started having relationships, which really didn't kind of happen till later seasons. And so you kind of saw her in the parts that, you know, ultimately she ended up landing years later, you know, because she kind of just fit the same, that girl in a romantic comedy thing. Like she was like a younger Meg Ryan type that kind of just fit there. And she was easy to cast into those parts, I guess.
Mm-hmm. So of the six main actors, only David Schwimmer has never had another TV show after Friends. On the flip side, Matthew Perry has had four shows he starred in after Friends, with only one, the reboot of The Odd Couple, lasting more than one season.
Wait, are you not counting The People versus OJ or American Crime?
No, they're not really. Those are technically just like, well, and also, you know.
And he wasn't a lead on that. Yeah, so yeah. Never mind. I retract.
And well, David Schwimmer was also on one of the seasons of Curb Your Enthusiasm, and he was hilarious in it too. Yeah. I thought that was such a great season with him.
Yeah, it's just what we were saying was more like he didn't get a show that he was a star of.
Right.
So for a second, let me put you in their shoes. Let's pretend you've just ended a run on one of the most successful shows in TV history, like they did, and the deals you made in the latter years of the show will make you and your future generations rich beyond your wildest imagination. Which route do you go from there? Do you A, try and make the transition to film, B, look for another TV show to star in, C, ask the network to spin your character off into your own series, or D, take parts at your leisure and enjoy the life you have?
D,
baby, yeah.
D all the way.
I think I would definitely go to try and find another TV show. Although, you know, like, because it seems like the only person who's ever done that successfully is Julie Louis-Dreyfus.
Yeah.
Like anybody else who's been on a hit show, it's like a blessing and then a curse, because you're always remembered as that character.
Mm-hmm.
But they all try it. I mean, like it's so rare that somebody like David Schwimmer just sits back and just collects money from it. And,
a lot of directing, right?
Yeah, yeah. He's done a lot. No,
a lot of behind the scenes stuff, which I actually would be. That can that be an option? Could that be E, do like behind the scenes, like producing, directing, writing?
Yeah, well, that's kind of like that. Do things at your leisure.
Oh, okay, yeah, but okay,
yeah.
What's her name? Phoebe. That's what she does. She's a huge game show producer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so
on top of The Comeback, which is an amazing fucking show, so good.
And
that's
Mom,
why she's my favorite.
And Mom, her son just graduated from USC.
Oh, nice.
You know, and then or be like Matt LeBlanc and go to a whole nother country and you know, remake your career there again and be there
with episodes. Yeah.
Not just episodes. He was also on Top Gear. And he was on another British show too. Like he went over there and was like, mm-hmm. "I'm just going to run British television for a while." So he did a great job.
So now I want to move on and talk about some of the controversies around Friends. The very first time a black person appeared on the show was eight seasons into the show, when Gabrielle Union made a guest appearance, and it took 10 seasons before one of the Friends dated someone black. When Ross briefly dated a character played by Aisha Tyler. Is that problematic to you, or do you just not think about it? Elizabeth, what do you think?
It is, yes, it is bad, but it's the context of the time it was filmed in, unfortunately. Like, people just were not thinking that way about how they were portraying like a city like New York and things like that. And that's the thing you can levy at a lot of shows like Sex and the City, probably, Seinfeld and things like that. There's so many of those shows really didn't feature non-white characters in any significant capacity. It's not excusing it exactly and being like, oh, it's perfect, it's fine, it's not a big deal. But it's also, I don't think it needs to be the thing that condemns the show to like, oh, you can't ever acknowledge it as being worthwhile because it was bad about this. Then you'd have to basically throw every sitcom or most shows in the trash at this point.
Yeah, I'm surprised like the cancel police hasn't gone after.
Nah, they keep trying.
It's funny because it's like I feel like people pick and choose. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, you don't see Friends as being problematic because they love the show so much.
Yeah.
But if it's another show, they might actually nitpick and say, oh, you know, they don't have any, you know, people of color on the show. But mm-hmm. I think Friends gets a pass for many reasons. I think.
Yeah.
Again, I'm not saying it's right or wrong. It's just an observation that I'm making.
Elizabeth hits it on the nail. It's the head on the nail. It was a sign of the times. You know, no one thought about it. Now you wouldn't make Friends like that.
Yeah.
Definitely wouldn't make it like that, but it's not a reason to cancel it now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And to be fair, Friends was unlike New York at all. Like, yeah. Even if it was like you say, but even the Friends themselves would have had a lot more of a diversity just amongst their whiteness, I hate to say, or something like that. Mm-hmm. They're very much not. They're very much not a picture of New York.
And people were okay with it because Oprah was interviewed. Well, she actually interviewed them, you know, at the, you know, when they were really spiking. And she said, hey, you know, what about, you know, black people on your show? Maybe I could be the black friend, you know, and come visit, you know? I mean, everybody wanted to be on that show and it didn't really matter, you know, that they, you know, that their ethnicities weren't being represented. They just wanted in.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, people pick and choose, and because that's such a huge show that people love so much, it's like they don't think about it, you know. And again, I'm not saying it's wrong for them to have done that, but just, you know, even saying like it was the times, it was only the 90s. It's not like we're talking, but it's just people weren't looking at it the way we look at things now. It's like when we talk about, well, you know what, it was a different time. I'm like, that was, you know, that was in the 90s. We're not talking about like the 60s or the 50s. But again, people didn't see it though.
People didn't think of people watching diversely because there were shows like Girlfriends that was on at the same time, and that was really popular. But it is relegated to like people kind of forget about it until honestly it got a big boost on Netflix recently. But I think that was kind of how programming was approached. Was like, this is programming for everybody, and when they say everybody, they mostly mean white people, and then they do. Oh, it's programming for black people, kind of a thing. Like, and no programming for anybody else. sorry, Latinos, you don't get any shows for a while.
We have Telemundo.
Yeah, right. And so they, you know, instead of kind of realizing that, like, oh, if you have relatable characters of any ethnicity, people will still watch. It doesn't, it shouldn't matter. It won't matter. It was still a very segmented, regimented idea.
Pete, go ahead.
Yeah, and I think it also goes back to what we were saying earlier, that it's kind of like a show out of time. So there really is no social issues involved in the show.
Yeah.
So their friends were those people. I mean, the fact that it took 8 seasons for a black person to actually speak on the show, that is kind of like bad. And the reality of it is that was becoming like a talking point, which is why Ross eventually dated Aisha Tyler's character in the 10th season. But also, I kind of think that the show gets a pass because they did a poll about 3 or 4 years ago of people's favorite favorite shows based on their age, and millennials and Gen Zers both called Friends their favorite show. And so you can't cancel your favorite show, no matter how problematic it might actually be. Yeah. So it's a perfect example of how we selectively cancel when people don't want to do it. I mean, it's just the show was not about social issues. So, you know, I mean, if they were trying to talk about police brutality and it was all a bunch of white people, then it would have been a little weird. Right. But they just weren't doing that. Mm-hmm.
So Friends had an incredible amount of fat shaming on the show. A major subplot on the show was that Courtney Cox's character, Monica Geller, was overweight for much of her life, and multiple episodes feature fat jokes about her. When Matthew Perry battled addiction and weight gain, it became something that was joked about on the show. Also, across the way from Monica and Rachel's apartment was the ugly naked guy, an overweight man who had a habit of doing mostly mundane things in the nude. Does it bother you that about the fat jokes or were very prevalent in the show? So, or again, we just, it was just all in fun.
They were never, like, I never liked them. I never thought that they were brilliant or like, incisive and clever. It was always just the butt of the joke.
Yeah.
And it was a meaner element that I didn't really care for. Unfortunately, I didn't really think much about Ugly Naked Guy, that they were always making fun of. It's not nice. And quit spying on people, I guess. Actually, I think the author we had on the other week pointed out, like, you know, making fun of fat people is still kind of one of the few, like, acceptable, like, mm-hmm. biases people can have, and that was certainly the case. The 90s, like, I've been watching and reading all this stuff, the 90s were a bad, bad time for body shaming just in general, regardless of the show. So the show itself is not, like, the only one that held up the beacon of, like, haha, make fun of fat people. Like, it was, like, heroin chic was in, people had to be rail thin, you know.
The fashion didn't help.
Yeah, the whole era is fraught. Mm-hmm. If you were even like 5 pounds overweight, so yeah.
I never took them as being mean spirited. I always thought they were good natured, and you know, I thought they were funny. Like the one where the prom video, Monica comes out. I think for the first time you really see how big she was,
and she's in a fat suit.
She says, you know. Stop, you know, the camera adds 10 pounds, which then Matthew Perry then goes, so how many cameras are on you?
Yeah, that's kind of mean, though. He's calling her, it's not nice.
Yeah, I mean, funny. You know, the thing with the show was it may be the only show in the history of television that made the fat character, like, the plot line that kind of drove some of the other things that happened, because like that prom episode is the episode where Rachel finds out how much Ross was into her. And it's all centered around fat Monica. And there's actually other episodes that kind of the fat Monica character is the catalyst for why other things happen in the show. And so they use it. I mean, yeah, you know, and maybe Danny sees it. There were some pretty mean spirited things. I mean, like there was one time when I think Ross said something to the effect of that, like, Hurricane Gloria didn't knock down the
horse main. Monica did.
It was fat Monica who did it. Like, it's like they went after like the fat jokes. And you know, anybody who writes comedy knows fat jokes are easy target jokes. So you know, it is kind of a cheap thing, but I guess that, you know, they could get away with it again because it's the favorite show of the people that would most want to cancel a show for something like that.
And you
see her journey, and now she's like super thin on the show, you know, so you see the journey and people could be and were inspired by it too.
And it's not the, like I said, it's not the only show. Like, even the show New Girl, which came out, what, in like 2012, 2013, that's a relatively new show. They had the Schmidt character's backstories. He used to be fat in college, mm-hmm. and that's part of why he's so fussy now is because of his weight. And they didn't quite be mean to him about it, but it's definitely like a bit of a punchline, you know. When the first flashback, that's the punchline, is like, oh, Schmidt used to look like that? That's crazy. He's so fit and tidy now, like, and he was slovenly and fat, and that was bad in college, but now he's improved. It's still going on even in recent years.
It's because, like Pete says, it's easy to write, and it's one of the things that will never go away. That's the one. That's the one thing that they're never going to get over is there will always be fat jokes. There's not going to be anyone going, oh, you shouldn't do that anymore. That's never going to happen.
So I know
Danny mentioned this earlier in the show about 9/11. And since the show lasted 2.5 seasons after 9/11, there was never any mention of the tragedy as like part of the storyline or even like remotely, like, you know, even talk about it. Because it is a comedy, was that okay in your opinion? I mean, I think to me, I don't think they had to mention it because it was supposed to be lighthearted and a comedy. Elizabeth.
Yeah, because it was always meant to be an escapist show or and like even like Sex and the City kind of barely acknowledges it. They have like a really nice like New York's the Greatest episode that has like a little dedication to it, but and that's an escapist thing too. I think, you know, much like we don't want really pandemic content right now, like I don't want to watch movies about pandemics. I don't want to watch, you know, shows I like. Some are addressing it, but like in just enough of a background way that it, it will make sense, and others just completely ignore it. And I'm kind of fine with that because I don't need to be reminded of like that, you know, of frankly, a thing that's still ongoing. And certainly in the case of 9/11, that was one of the first times we saw those kind of images replayed over and over and over. It was in your brain. You knew it happened. You knew it happened in New York. You didn't need, you know, Joey to be like, oh no, we can't go down there. That's where the World Trade Center was. Like, you know,
it's been out of context in the show.
Yeah.
Yeah. It has no context at all.
It would have been completely against what the show was about.
So. Cause they weren't even like, oh, let's go to the Empire State Building or Central Park. They didn't really highlight New York landmarks either. I feel like
they did go running in the park.
Yeah,
all right.
It's
TV ran
all. Park, yeah, yeah. It's like, it's not, it's, you know.
There's a park in Los Angeles and you know it, Danny.
Warner Studios, Warner Brothers Studios.
Yeah.
No, I definitely think Will and Grace did a better job at highlighting, like, places. You know, New York. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Go ahead, Joe. Sorry.
It was not real New York anyway. It was fantasy New York, so that's fine. Because that coffee shop was way too clean. You know that they would have gotten some sort of disease on that couch. So you could always, the camera could always look into the skylight, which is bullshit. That skylight would be so dirty. I don't care how many times you try to clean it. That skylight would be so dirty. You'd clean it, and 2 days later, you wouldn't be able to look through it again. Just all sorts of just crazy. Like,
pigeon shit.
Like they're talking in the coffee shop, and you don't hear a siren go by every minute and a half. It wasn't real New York, so I think it's okay. It was a fantasy city. It was a fantasy version. Alternate reality New York is where they lived. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I the whole thing, you know, when I was, you know, going over the notes and stuff like we've been talking about, it's a comedy. So really, like, there was like no need to mention, you know, 9/11. Like the two dramas that I watch now on network television, they have talked about the pandemic. They are wearing masks. But at the same time, it's like, you know, it is part of the storyline, but it's very minimal because it is helping with the other storyline, like why someone is stuck abroad and can't come home.
Right.
And also they are highlighting the importance of wearing masks, trying to help people. But that's about it. So, yeah, no, I mean, I don't fault them for not including 9/11.
And if they did, it was only the promo to the beginning of the season where, you know, at times like this, all you need are your friends because they had just finished Chandler and Monica's wedding. And Rachel was announcing, you know, that she was pregnant. So I remember the commercial, they're all hugging in the bathroom, you know, with the Enya song in the background. So that kind of made you feel a little bit like, oh, you know, this is what I need. I need my friends back.
Okay, so here's a piece of trivia that you might not know. Matt LeBlanc's character, Joey Tribbiani, was the first TV character to ever use the term the friend zone. So for the guys that are on the panel today, who probably have at some point been put in the friend zone by someone they liked, how happy are you with Joey for giving it that name? Danny, have you ever been put in the friend zone by someone that... So now you can thank Joey Tribbiani for that.
Thanks, Joey.
Man, I've been put in the friend zone. Are you kidding me? It is not exclusive to guys. I'm sorry.
Oh, Elizabeth.
Just saying.
You can thank Joey then.
Yeah.
Pete, Joe, any thoughts on
this? I think it's just fun that they actually gave it a name.
Yeah.
Because before then, you just were somebody that somebody wasn't into. now at least you had the qualification of being somebody's friend. Oh, we're still friends now. But you don't want to be with me, but we're friends, friend zone. So at least it kind of softened the blow. But I, you know, that was interesting because I did not know that until I read it this morning.
I didn't either.
It was really, really unique.
Yeah. Joe, any thoughts on the friend zone?
Well, I'm not a big believer of the actual friend zone. No. I think it gets into way more complicated things like that. But people kind of use it as an excuse but like Pete says, if someone's just not into you in that way, that's fine. But now the friend zone, like, oh, yeah, I was friend zone and blah, blah, blah. It makes it like it's their fault for not liking you in that way, and I don't think that's right. But
people are not sexy about.
That's my own feeling on it. But hey,
that you put niceness coins into to get sex from.
Yeah, exactly. And it's the whole thing is basically, hey, this is from a TV show. So now it makes it even more dorkier.
Yeah.
So lastly, and possibly most disturbingly, the show Friends, which was about Gen Xers in the mid-1990s, was adopted 20 years later by millennials and Gen Zers as one of their favorite shows, especially when it began airing on Netflix, where for a period of time, the show was responsible for 4% of everything streamed on Netflix. It is arguable that the show created what some call the millennial generation. Who wants to explain that to me? Or to all of us here? Pete.
This is something I've held as a long-term belief. And thankfully, there are articles after articles that agree with me on this. Because the show, again, like Joe was saying before, takes place in a version of New York that doesn't exist. Like, the New York Post did an article a few years back about how much the apartments would have costed and versus how much money they were making in rent. And at the time in the mid-90s, a one-bedroom apartment on the street where they supposedly lived would have been about $2,200. So a two-bedroom with that size would have probably gone for anywhere between $3,000 and $4,000 a month. Mm-hmm. I'm speaking of Rachel and Monica's apartment.
Yeah.
Combined, their salary, because they did look this up as well, would have been roughly about $550 a month.
Oh my God.
So somehow or another, they probably were turning tricks on the side that we did not see. I mean, the only one who had a job that in theory could have been commiserate with what they had was Ross, because he was a doctor and a teacher. Mm-hmm. So he could have in theory been making enough money, but everyone else in the show was not making anywhere near what they should have been making to afford the lifestyle they did. And then when you look about 3 or 4 years ago, they did a survey on millennials, asking them about home buying, because the millennial generation is the first generation that actively says they don't want to buy homes. But of the people,
we can't.
Well, the study actually said that a majority of millennials said that they didn't have an interest in buying a home at the time. This is
it's still true.
But when they did ask if you were going to buy a home, what size home you would want, the answer that seemed to pop up the most was about 20,000 square feet. And so the idea that millennials had that you could just have this incredible life, do whatever you want, and then get a 20,000 square foot home probably came from Friends. Also, the term adulting, I didn't even know this either until I read it, is a term that's based directly off of Friends, because Friends is the show where you could have a job, but somehow in the middle of the day, pop into the coffee shop and hang out with your friends there for a little while, and then go back to your job, which is adulting. It's exactly the same thing. Like, we're having our friend time, but then we're going to go adulting afterwards. There's so many things about the show that kind of like plays into the psyche of people now, that of the younger group of people. And I hate to say it because it makes me sound like I'm 150 years old, but it really, the show kind of made these people like you date indiscriminately. There's no, you know, there's like that relationships have very little value. Like when you watch the Rachel character, she's really not a nice person to Ross, because she doesn't like Ross until he hooks up with Julie. Then once he hooks up with Julie, then she's in love with him. Then she dumps him, and then he goes to get married. And when he gets married, she tells him she's in love with him again.
She was a very spoiled person.
Yeah. It's another one of those things that, like, you look at the way social media, you know, goes back and forth with some of these kids. It's like their ideas of relationships came from Friends. So Friends, in my opinion, and again, if you want to look it up on your Google later, there's a ton of articles how even psychologists say that Friends did play a part in shaping the millennial and Gen Z psyche.
Elizabeth?
Yeah, I buy that, because I'm squarely, firmly in the millennial generation, at least depending on the day. Because first it was the Oregon Trail generation, it was like a year before me, and now they're geriatric millennials or whatever, it doesn't matter.
The consensus is 1981, you had to be born by 1981 I saw a different...
To be a millennial?
To be a millennial, you had to be born by 1981.
86, baby. Don't do the math. Anyway, Yeah, I think, and I could be wrong, but it feels like the millennial generation in particular, because we spent a lot of time watching TV and reruns and things like that, more so maybe than Gen X, I would imagine. That's how, like, you know, the ideas of what life and adulthood would look like get formed, you know, by what you're seeing. And there's so much, you know, material targeted. This is slightly different, but like that show Laguna Beach on MTV, where it was just a reality show, or The Hills rather, you know, about them working in Hollywood. I know a lot of people a couple years younger than me who are like on the tail end of millennial. We're like, yeah, I wanted to move to Hollywood because The Hills made it seem cool. And mm-hmm. I flipped it. I also went, I don't understand that show. What do they do on it? It doesn't make sense, but that's a whole other story. So yeah, it shows make things appealing, which is, again, weird that I was so into the Drew Carey show because I had no intention of moving to Ohio and opening a brewery in my backyard and working for a department store. And yet I watched it intensely and obsessively. I loved that show.
Well, you do make a good point, because if you think about, no, I'm a Gen X like Pete, yeah. And you think about the stuff when we were kids mm-hmm. that we watched were, you know, Archie Bunker and all these guys, and it was a lot more very
the older group,
blue
of
collar,
yeah.
middle class, very, you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. Whereas Friends, what we talk about is like being in a fantasy.
And they all had white collar jobs of some kind, yeah.
But they all could afford this fancy lifestyle, you know. Mm-hmm. And Drew Carey, you know, I realized Drew Carey was, but he just turns around and opens a brewery. No one yeah. could just turn around and open a brewery. I mean, as fun as it is, you know.
Actually, so, my friends did that, but it did take a very long time.
Yeah, it takes a very long. That's what I'm saying. It's not just yeah. like, oh, you know, this season a brewery.
Yeah, took them years and years. Yeah.
So other than the dating each other, I'm sorry. I'm just reading a note that's just coming in right now. I was going to ask you guys who your favorite boyfriend or girlfriend to one of the friends was. And also, who's one of your favorite non-Friends characters?
Oh.
So for me, it was Richard. I loved Tom Selleck because I always had a crush
you
on him.
You would.
Yes. Tom Selleck, Richard, and Janice, of course. So I thought,
yeah, I love Janice.
Non-Friends characters, I really, like, again, I haven't watched the show.
I was going to say, to Pete's point that Rachel was a bad person, it's the most random cameo, but because I was a little nerd with parents who like to watch stuff on PBS that was from the BBC, when she's going to go fly to England to try to stop Ross's wedding, mm-hmm. and she's seated next to Hugh Laurie.
Yes.
And she's explaining everything, and he goes, I'm sorry, but you're a terrible person. Just absolutely awful. Why on earth would you do any of that? And he's just so perfect. And so, like, that's the part I like, but that's, like, talk about a one-off non-Friends characters. One appearance from Hugh Laurie for their whole arc of going to England in the first place. But it really cracked me up at the time because she's yammering away and he finally takes his headphones off. He's like, you're awful.
So, Pete, who's your favorite?
Well, I have to say that Janice was the most New York character yeah. on that show. And I think that's probably why I found her so attractive. and why she was probably my favorite. Although I think of my favorite characters that weren't of the Friends, I think when Jon Favreau was dating Courtney Cox, he was my favorite because
oh, yeah.
he was rich, but he was trying to pretend like he wasn't rich for the show. And it was just like
yeah.
something about it was really, it was funny. And I love Jon Favreau and he was kind of sweet in the character, mm-hmm. but yeah, Janice and then his character. Yeah.
I completely forgot about him too. Yeah, he was.
Wasn't he like a kind of an Elon Musk, where he was like
yes,
a tech
exactly.
billionaire, but he was doing the MMA stuff or something?
Yes, exactly. That was exactly it. He was the
Elon
archetype
Musk
for Elon Musk.
Oh my God, do you think Elon Musk formed his whole identity around the job?
I'm starting to think that might be possible.
Danny, what about you?
I got to go with Mike, Paul Rudd. You know,
he
ended up being the seventh friend. You know, he was hilarious. I liked his character a lot. And non-Friends, it would have to be both Amy and Jill Green, Rachel's sisters, played by Christina Applegate and Jennifer Aniston. They were hilarious.
You mean Reese Witherspoon?
Reese Witherspoon, I'm sorry, yes.
Yeah. Oh, you know who I like? I liked Hank Azaria. He was the Phoebe's boyfriend.
Yeah.
That had to go to Minsk. I just remember Minsk. That.
Giovanni Ribisi played Phoebe's brother.
Oh, her brother,
and she carried his baby, which I thought was great.
So
he was funny on the show, too. Mm.
John, he was
actually great. Christina Applegate won an Emmy for her role.
Oh, did she?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Danny with the Friends research.
I know nothing.
That episode was hilarious. It really was.
Yeah.
So should Ross and Rachel have ended up together?
I guess.
It was inevitable. Sure. It was inevitable.
They were end game, as they say nowadays, for stuff.
She got off the plane.
Yeah, I actually read a really good article today explaining about how Friends, it turns out, is the greatest example of conservative relationships in the history of television, because Rachel gets this amazing job working for Louis Vuitton in Paris. And Ross rushes to the airport to tell her not to go. And so she says, you know what? For love, I'll just give up my career and go and be with the man I love, which apparently is conservative thesis. So
kind of, yeah, because she gives up everything to go stay with him and his, you know, not floundering exactly career, but it's not really going anywhere. That was a huge career leap for her. And she theoretically blew it off to...
Yeah.
Stay with the.
Also, shout out to Elliot Gould.
Okay.
Yeah. He was amazing as
Mr. Geller.
Ross and Monica's dad.
Yeah.
And I didn't see a lot of episodes, but I did happen to see like more than one with him in it, and I always thought he was really good at it. But then again, that man has just impeccable timing, so it's really good.
What about Kathleen Turner as Chandler's dad?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, if you're going to get a woman to play somebody's dad, Kathleen Turner probably was the perfect casting for it.
Yeah. They've come under fire for that.
Yeah, that was another one.
Because it was very much, you know, not a respectful acknowledgement of
a trans woman.
It was all played for laughs and, you know. There's a lot of gay panic stuff in the show too, you know, like is Chandler gay? Is, you know, Ross is upset that his son at one point is playing with Barbies or might have a male nanny. But that was like standard for 90s stuff was like, you know, gay panic, you know, like, oh, you don't want to be too gay.
The golden age of gay panic.
Also, yeah. Mr. Heckles downstairs was pretty cool.
And actually the funny one too was actually Will Colbert, who was actually Brad Pitt's character. He was funny and also nominated for an Emmy. And
can we also have a shout out for Gunther?
Oh, yeah.
They shit all over Gunther. Gunther was just like, he was like a set piece there. He was like the sofa. Like they just put him in the background.
Right, but that's what I'm saying. Give a shout out for Gunther because he had to come to that show every week knowing that he was just going to get shit on.
So I guess the final question I want to ask is, I mean, we already talked a little bit about this, but are you guys looking forward to the reunion and what are you hoping to see? So I know we talked a little bit earlier. Honestly, I could go either way. Like if Pete puts it on and I'm home, then I'll be home.
Well, I'll
be watching it, but I'm not going to go out of my way to watch it either. Elizabeth.
Yeah, I'm not clamoring for it because, you know, like Pete said, they're not going to drop any bombshells about anything.
Yeah.
It's going to all be very sweet remembrances. Like I said, I'm actually really, truly miffed that James Corden is involved because he tends to just center so many bits and interviews about himself that I'm hoping that's not the case with this because you are tuning in for them, not him. But like, it looks like there's a fashion show and stuff like that. I don't know what they're doing. Because I have no great huge affinity for Friends, I don't feel an urge to watch it. Now I think I had to watch it for work, but that's a different story.
Yeah, but you personally, you're not
personally
like, you if wait to see it. Yeah,
if I wasn't paying attention to it for work, I would go about my Thursday evening with something else.
Yeah.
Well, the good thing is it's on HBO Max, so they can curse.
Yeah. I'm going to watch it, but I'm also going to do. I'm going to also be spending the time looking at Reddit porn. Just so it's not like I'm not completely. I'm not going to be completely immersed in it.
So. Yeah. So, Danny, let me ask you this: as you are clearly the biggest Friends fan on the panel today, what are you hoping to see in the reunion show? Because I'm not going to ask you. You're obviously looking forward to it. Oh, and Pete, check your message. Well, go ahead, Danny.
I'm sorry.
No, I'm sorry. I was telling Pete to check.
Oh. Mm-hmm. I don't know, it's just like the witty banter, you know. Yeah, they do get together often, but this is the first time they've all been in the same place in a very long time. I think they've only been together once or twice at best since the show ended. So it's always fun to reminisce. So I'm looking forward to, you know, to seeing them recreate some of the scenes like they did in the promo. So I think it'll be a good time. Yeah, I think there was a lot of sentiment behind the Fresh Prince one, you know, and this one seems to be a little bit more predictable, but people who are really real true friends of friends, true fans of friends, I'm sorry, I think they're all, we'll all be crying in tears, happy to see them again.
Yeah, I have a lot of friends who are going to be crying and happy.
I worked with one girl who made it her life's goal to meet every one of the friends. And by the time I got to know her, she had everybody but Jennifer Aniston. And then went separate ways work-wise. But then I saw somewhere on Instagram that she did it. And I was like, good for her. She
wow,
did it. She did it. I was like, talk about fucking manifesting. So she's going to be in tears on Thursday night for sure.
Oh, I'm sure. So we close tonight with Celebrity Hunger Games, in which we take famous characters from TV or film and we decide who would win in a Hunger Games battle. How could we discuss a battle to the death if it did not include yours and my favorite friends, Ross, Rachel, Chandler, Phoebe, Joey, and Monica? Oh, and we're throwing in Gunther from Central Park and Chandler's favorite ex, Janice. So for 10 seasons, they were there for each other, but tonight they'll be there to watch each other die. It's the Friends Hunger Games. Sorry, guys. I'm having a hard time reading tonight. Okay, so let's look at our participants and decide who might be the last friend standing.
I already know.
So wait a minute. We're going by characters and not actors.
Characters, yes.
By characters?
Yes, by characters.
Okay. I got the answer for you. It's Monica. Girl is fucking ruthless and competitive and smart and very conniving. I'm telling you. Janice is too sweet. Phoebe's too spacey. Rachel is too soft as well. No dice. Ross is like the older sibling, but is easily overtaken. You know, he gets put down by Monica all the time. Joey, too dumb. No way. And Chandler, it might be like a lover's match at the end because Chandler's pretty smart, but I'm telling you, Monica's got the drive and the edge to take them all out and be the Hunger Games winner.
I agree with you. Go ahead, Pete.
I think that they're going to look at Joey and say he's too stupid, so they're going to keep him around until near the end. I think they all want to get rid of Chandler right away so he doesn't make any smart ass.
Could I be anymore in the Hunger Games?
Yes. He's definitely dead. I think they kill him and then they kill Rachel right away as well because she's the most conniving out of the group. So I think she's sure. Definitely in there. I think Janice hangs around for quite a while only because nobody wants to get close enough to her to have a conversation and then kill her. So what I think it really is going to come down to in my mind is it's going to be Phoebe and Gunther. Because I think Phoebe, again, they're going to sleep on her and they're going to think, oh, she's not smart enough to get this far. And Gunther, you know, just has this German rage in him that I think he's been holding on to for all this time. And so they're all dead at his hands.
You're right. I think I would like to rescind and say, because Monica is too competitive, she'll overthink. And that's where Phoebe will come in as the sleeper agent the whole time. Yeah. I think Phoebe takes it all now. Sorry. I rescind my original suggestion.
Hey, Danny, what about you?
The guys are weak, so the girls have always been stronger on that show.
Yep.
So they're easily out. Gunther's out because as soon as someone goes for Rachel, he's going to take the bullet for her.
Right on.
And then let's see. Janice, she's going to see all the melee and start saying, ow, my. And here's going to come Chandler with the knife in the throat. You know, and go away with her, so she's out. So I think it does come down to the three girls. You know, Rachel is, they're going to do away with her quick. So it comes down to me between Monica and Phoebe. Mm-hmm. And there was an episode where Rachel and Monica were wrestling. And who actually separated them? Phoebe. Phoebe's the stronger one. Phoebe's going to get the guitar and smash it over Monica's head. Phoebe with the win. And there you go.
Okay.
Bring your favorite.
You know, you all are just you're missing one thing. Joey's going to have the cheese robot with him.
Cheese robot?
That's a cheese robot.
It also makes me think of the Futurama joke, you know, why does Ross, the largest of the friends, simply not eat the others?
Yeah.
And okay. Phoebe had a hooker spit in her mouth, and she survived. Like, so
each one of them knows what's the trigger that's going to just set them off.
Yeah,
you know, and like someone's going to pivot a couch the wrong way, and Ross is going to kill everybody. It really is. It really He's can still. Edge. It can go. It can go anyway.
Well, there you go. So that is our show for tonight. Thank you so much for joining us, and we'll see you back here again tomorrow at 6 p.m. Bye, everyone. Have a good night and stay safe. Bye.
We'll be there for you.